interview with Lieutenant Commander J.M. Arnold, 28 April 1997. Lieutenant Commander Arnold, perhaps we can start by you giving us an overview of your time with the RCN when you first joined, your training and courses prior to your involvement with the VX-10 and the helicopter trials aboard Assiniboine in 1964.
I joined the RCN as a midshipman air in course number 3 at Cornwallis in June of 1952. At that time I was still a member of the Royal Canadian Artillery in the reserve as a lieutenant. So I resigned my commission in the Army and joined the Navy. One of the considerations was that I was at the right age and had the right education for the time, being a senior matric in high school, which was a requirement for midshipman air. I completed Cornwallis after 6 months, and in January of 53, joined Quebec and undertook 6 months of training as a midshipman in various aspects of shipborne life, and one of the visits we had during that period was the coronation cruise for Elizabeth II. Completion of that training in July, August of 53, we proceeded, those who were left of our course, I think we'd lost a couple members by then, proceeded to RCF station at Centralia, Ontario, to fly Harvards for initial flying training with Air Force counterparts. And we were sub-lieutenants, or acting sub-lieutenants at that time. On completion of the training at Centralia, three of us were selected to fly fighter aircraft, and we proceeded to Gimli, Manitoba in early 54 to fly the T-33. We graduated, got our wings at Gimli, and returned to Shearwater to start some flying naval aircraft. At that time, essentially, were the Harvard, back to the Harvard, and I had my first flights in the Sea Fury. Later in the fall, I believe it was probably August, three of us proceeded to the Royal Naval Air Station at Lossiemouth in Scotland, where we did our advanced flying training in jets, namely the Seahawk and the Sea Vampire. Returned in the spring of 55, I joined I joined VF-871, which was flying Sea Furies at the time, and flew from the carrier on Sea Furies that fall of 55. After several courses on one thing and another, we converted to Banshees in 58, and the squadron as a whole completed some intercept training at Key West, Florida, and we proceeded to Bonaventure for carrier qualifications aboard that carrier as well, which had come into service at that time. In 59, I went to Chatham, New Brunswick, to check out on the F-86 Sabre, because I had been selected to go to the for flight test for the United States Naval Test Pilot course at Patuxent River, Maryland. So I convinced my superiors that I needed to get some swept wing time on the Sabres. In the summer of 59, I proceeded to Patuxent River and graduated from Patuxent River in the spring of 1960 and proceeded to DX-10. In DX-10, I initially started accepting trackers, the CS2F, from the plant at Downsview as one of my main jobs. And then I gradually worked into flying and various project directors that were assigned to the pilots who were in DX-10. I believe, looking in my logbook, that I first checked out on a helicopters, the Bell, early in 1962. And then in May of 1960, that was the Bell, followed by the HO4S, Sikorsky. And then that was followed by training in May of 1963, when about a dozen of us went down to the Sikorsky plant in Stratford, Connecticut, to get checked out in the Sea King helicopter. So we were flying, at least my logbook indicates that we were flying the Sikorsky in Stratford, Connecticut, the latter part of May and a little bit in June, and completed our flying training on that helicopter type in early July of 1963. Shall we stop there?
All right. I have a couple of questions. When you went for your training at the Patuxent River in the late 1950s on fixed-wing aircraft, that was for training as a test pilot, fixed-wing, to go back to the RCN?
Yes, that's correct. It was strictly fixed-wing training at that time. There was no rotary-wing training, which came in a year or two later for people who were pointed at going into rotary-wing testing, for instance, like Joe Sostakowski and Zbigniew. When I, in the later part of completing training at Patuxent River, I had convinced myself and convinced everybody around there that I was going to go into flying in flight test division of Patuxent River, and I had assurances that that's where I was heading to fly Crusaders, and which I thought was wonderful, and because no one had done that before. And on the strength of that, I went back to Toronto on completion of the test pilot school, bought myself a new card, duty-free, of course, considering that I was going to be in the States for a period of time. Went back to Patuxent River, and there was a message waiting for me saying that, sorry about that, Arnold. The Canadian Navy has decided that we were going to get out of the fighter business and concentrate on helicopters, and so that you are now going back to Shearwater. And I had quite a time convincing the people at the customs in Bangor, Maine, that that I had befallen on a very bad situation. But I think they commiserated with me to the extent that I was forgiven for half the amount of the duty that I would normally have paid on my car. Luckily, it wasn't an expensive car.
What is involved to become a qualified test pilot? And we'll start with fixed wing first, because that was your first training. To become a qualified test pilot, taking the course at Patuxent River, as opposed to being checked out on a particular type of aircraft and getting your wings?
What was involved? It was sort of the defining point, I suppose, in most pilots' lives, if they could become a qualified engineering test pilot. This was what could be considered a career highlight for most pilots. I suppose the things that were involved was that an ability to be able to take college degree courses. I was, I don't know whether I was a good example or a bad example, but I believe I was probably one of the last people to go through as not having a college university education at all, strictly high school. So Dudley Allen, who was also used to fly with us in the squadron, had retired as an admiral, was a pilot, an engineer, an air engineer, and he helped me to study calculus, which was one of the requirements for the course, and I'd never taken calculus. So during the length, the stage of the course, I think some of us, there were about four or five of us who were having a little trouble with the academics. So one of the more talented members of the course would take us under his wing. Mind you, this member happened to have a master's degree in aeronautical engineering, and all the other members of the course had at least a degree in science or a degree in air engineering from the equivalent American Naval Academy.
What other courses would be involved beyond calculus for to become a qualified test pilot?
Well, it was a 9-month course, and during the period of the course, you took half days in school and half days flying, and you have to have an ability to observe and be able to write what you had observed while you were flying aircraft, and which demanded quite a bit of concentration, especially in some cases, because essentially what you did was explore the flight envelope of an aircraft in a particular regime, whether it be engine or flight characteristics of an aircraft.
So you would be pushing any particular aircraft right to the edge of the envelope?
Right to the edge of the envelope, yeah.
And maybe even beyond?
Well, those who went too far beyond it were unfortunate casualties of flying. Our particular course, I can recall that there were some members of the course that subsequent to taking the course had some pretty terrible accidents. Three members of the course went on to become squadron commanders and were lost in Vietnam. The last time I went to any reunion, about four or five of the members had reached admiral rank, and everybody was wondering what had happened to me. However, that's beside the point. But it was a very demanding course, and like courses of that nature are, and it pushed people to their limits, and you either succeeded or you didn't.
Now, when you were on this course, were you being taught by qualified test pilots in the U.S. Navy at the Tuxpan River?
Oh yes, they're all qualified test pilots. The flight who were flying with us on particular aircraft for particular sessions. One of the members of my course was, one of the instructional staff was Pete Conrad, who later became an astronaut who went to the moon. And it was a pretty exciting time for us. And matter of fact, I went to the 50th reunion of the test pilot school several years ago and took my oldest son with me. And it was quite an eye-opening experience to see how things have changed since 1960.
Right. Would there normally be a high attrition rate for pilots undergoing this course at Patuxent River?
Normally there is a fair attrition rate. We had a group of 18, and one failed during the length of the course, and one, unfortunately, the pressure must have been too much, but he committed suicide right directly after course graduation.
Oh boy. So following the successful completion of this course, you returned to Shearwater?
That's correct.
And went to VX-10 at that time?
Went to VX-10, but I spent most of the fall of 60 flying out of Downsview, accepting trackers from Downsview.
Now, you said earlier in the tape that you were first checked out on rotary wing aircraft, and that was the Bell. Was that the Bell 47 with the plexiglass bubble canopy?
That's right, that was the Bell 47. Yeah, what we were calling the HTL-6.
Now, that aircraft was normally employed by the utility squadron, if I remember correctly. Is that right?
HU-21, yeah.
Now, when you say that you were checked out on the Bell 47, were you checked out by a pilot in HU-21 squadron?
That's right. I was checked out by a pilot in that squadron. I never joined the squadron. I just because they were anticipating various trials coming up, which VX-10 would receive, which required some people to have some helicopter experience. And that was my first helicopter experience. So I believe I, according to my logbook, if I look in it, it was February, mid-February of 62, I went solo in the Bell.
Now, in order to get checked out on a particular aircraft, and in this case it's helicopters, how long would that normally take, if you can use the word?
I think I had, if I, looking in my book, it looks like I had probably about 10 hours, 8 to 10 hours in the helicopter before I checked out and went solo on it. I can remember the Jerry Watson was the guy that gave me my, did most of the flying with me, and he said, "You're okay to go." I was hung onto the cyclic so hard that my thumb was numb for a week after that. So I must have been fairly tense at the time. I figured he'd sent me out to kill myself.
You're anticipating my questions now. So what were your impressions of converting from fixed wing to rotary wing? I assume it's an entirely different feel.
Oh yes, it was certainly a very different feel. And to me, my way of thinking, after flying fixed-wing aircraft, the helicopter was the most unstable thing in the world, and you just couldn't let your hands go at all, not in this particular one, and you were constantly on the controls. But it's like all things, once you get used to it, it's not so bad. And it was kind of interesting flying low to the ground and a different flight regime altogether.
Now, would that have been normal procedure to be checked out on the Bell, for example, with HU-21, as opposed to being sent to the States for a helicopter conversion pilot training?
I really don't know. I think... normally, if I recall, the people who were destined to go to, say, HS-50 would be going to HU-21 for conversion and then go on to HS-50. There were some individuals who went down to the States, but I think primarily those who went down to the States flying helicopters are probably people who had already flown helicopters in the RCN and were going down to... into some kind of an exchange posting or appointment, that's how we used to call them.
Or down to VX-1?
To VX-1, into Key West. I know at some point in time in the mid-50s, they converted flying when people destined for naval flying went down to Pensacola, Florida to do their flying training there. My group and several groups before me and after me went through the Air Force scheme in Canada, through Centralia, or Portage.
Which would have been, roughly what time period would that have been?
Well, the early 50s.
Early 50s.
I'm not sure when the conversion happened for instance, my brother, who was in the joined as a flight cadet and it was starting Centralia the same time I did in 53. He was CT because he got airsick, and then he joined Venture, which is out here, trained out here, still wanted to go flying, went down to Pensacola, Florida, and flew there, and then came back to Shearwater to fly an 880.
I see.
They fly charters and they did. So when these programs started and stopped, I really can't remember, other than the fact that what I went through or recall that other people went through.
Following your time when you were checked out on the Bell with HU-21, how soon after were you checked out on the F-55 Sikorsky helicopter?
Well, I'll just do a check here. Getting there. Okay. It's a bit new. I believe it's a bit new. In August. August 20th was my first flight.
In 1963?
April 4th, 62.
62.
Yeah. And then I flew with that, the Tracker, and the Bell. Let's see, I didn't fly that again until... April of 63, then I got into the familiarization flights leading up to going solo in the horse in the HO-4S-3.
Which was the...
That was toward the end of April I went solo in the horse.
So that was the navalized version, the 3. For this Sikorsky aircraft, is that correct?
I have to presume that it is, yeah.
All right. How long did it take for to be checked out on the F-55 as opposed to the Bell 47? Was that a longer period of time?
Oh, yeah. No, a little shorter.
A little shorter.
It was about 6 hours. I think I had 6 trips. My 7th trip was solo.
All right.
About an hour each.
An hour each.
Yeah.
Very quick. So this is 63. So your next helicopter...
That was April 63. Yeah.
April 63.
So in May 27th of the next month, we started flying on 4001 down at Stratford, Connecticut.
Now, why would you have been sent to the Sikorsky plant to be checked out on that aircraft as opposed to a squadron in the USN? I believe they were operational in the USN at this point in time.
Yeah, they were, and the fact that I believe there are probably some people who are flying them on exchange appointments with the USN at that time. I'm not sure, other than the fact that I can only presume that they wanted a group of people, because most of the people in the course were VX-10, or I'd say 50% of them were VX-10. They wanted a group of people to be involved with the Sea King in VX-10, and people who were on staff in various organizations, so that these people would be familiar with the problems of the Sea King and how to fly it.
Would that course have been run by the senior test pilot for Sikorsky?
I can only presume it was. I've got a couple names here, but I don't know their position other than they were Czech pilots.
All right. How long were you down at the Sikorsky plant for the familiarization with the Sea King helicopter?
Well, started in May the 27th. That was my first flight. May had 2 flights, 3/28 into, so I had almost a flight a day into June. Fourth of June, so the 27th of May to 4th of June, I had about 8 flights, and I went back to Shearwater.
Would during that time for your 8 flights down at the Sikorsky plant, would they have been all daytime only flights?
Yeah. Yeah, these were daytime flights with the last couple of that in June. On June the 4th, I flew with, June the 4th was BAM 5, and then later on that day, I flew, Shell Roll and I flew together, and then we switched around and flew again that day. You know, it was only for about half an hour each.
So would there have been any sort of coursework or lectures as well?
Yeah,
as
there was ground school involved, just as far as I can remember.
All right.
You know, maintenance and engineering and how the thing worked.
What were your impressions of the Sea King helicopter as opposed to the S-55 and the Bell that you've flown?
Oh, I think it was pretty impressive. You know, this machine seemed to have a degree of stability that the other ones didn't. And of course, it was a huge helicopter and lots of power, and you're conscious of all the power because in the Bell and the Bell, if I went flying with another heavy guy, we had trouble getting off the ground.
In the Bell helicopter?
With the Bell with a full fuel load.
But I guess they were pretty underpowered
aircraft. They were quite underpowered, yeah.
And if I remember correctly, they probably weren't... you weren't completely enclosed. I mean, there were no doors on either side of the canopy in the Bell, was there?
Yeah, it had the Perspex bubble went all the way around, and the Perspex doors that you opened and closed to get in and out of it.
All right, I guess I've seen some photographs without the doors.
Yeah, they had doors in them. Yeah. Right. These things did.
So the Sikorsky, the Sea King was certainly state-of-the-art compared to anything else that was flying at that time.
That was one of the newest things I'd flown. As a matter of fact, it probably was about the newest type of machine I'd ever flown. So, there were what impressed me is when I was on the course, besides being introduced to drinking a yard of ale, was there were two pilots from UACL with us at the time, and one of them after lunch could curl up in the back of a helicopter and fall asleep for half an hour just look at clockwork, and he did that every day.
Right.
And he said this was a routine he developed while flying the bush, and where you'd sit down somewhere and at lunchtime and have your lunch, and no matter where you were, you'd put down somewhere, have your lunch, and have a sleep. And that's the way he managed to keep going.
What were you happy from a safety perspective that you had the additional engine? You had the dual gas turbine engines as opposed to the single piston engine in the Bell and the S-55, so that if you lost an engine, you at least could fly?
Well, safety aspects of it didn't worry me all that much. You know, essentially in the helicopter, whether you lost the engine or not, you knew that you're always in a position, unless the damn rotor came off, then you're really in trouble. That you could always auto-rotate down. In fact, that was, besides, you know, taking off and landing safely, your auto-rotation was the next important thing you practiced doing. So you developed quite a bit of confidence in the machine and in your own ability to cope with flying the machine. So that's my impression, is you knew that if all things, you know, worst came to worst, you could always auto-rotate somewhere.
So your first auto-rotation, I guess, would have been conducted on the Bell?
Oh, yeah.
47?
Yeah, it was standard, like, it was standard flying in the Harvard, basic training, you know, practice horse landings. You know, you pick it, say, if you've got an engine failure, what do you do now? You look for a feel.
Right. So following the familiarization course at the Sikorsky plant, did you return to Shearwater?
We went to Shearwater, and then we returned, looking at my logbook, looks like I was doing some tracker flying to get from there to Shearwater and back, and some... And then in July 22nd, returned to Sikorsky plant to fly again. And I flew, and next day we flew a couple day trips, and there was a night trip on the 23rd of July. And then went back to Shearwater again. We were just there for 2 days. Flew six flights in 2 days.
And this was in July of
1963. And then that was it.
All right, we'll just stop the tape here and turn it over.